5:05 was Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. European leaders divided over the migration crisis. Europe's migrant crisis Tuesday focused on the Hungarian capital Budapest, where authorities briefly shut down the main train station. Hundreds of migrants, mostly from the Middle East, were left stranded outside as they sought passage to Austria and Germany. Hungarian Foreign Minister Péter Szijjártó took aim at the policy of mandatory quotas of migrants for each European Union member, saying that has failed because it encourages human traffickers and immigrants. He says those who take steps to stop the influx are smeared with false allegations. Meanwhile, the International Organization for Migration said Tuesday more than 350,000 have made their perilous journey across the Mediterranean this year to escape poverty, persecution, and war. The 28-member EU plans to hold emergency talks on the migrant issue September 14 in Brussels. South African President Jacob Zuma escaped an impeachment bid over his government's refusal to arrest Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir under indictment by the International Criminal Court over war crimes in Darfur. Sumi Mamani is leader of South Africa's opposition.
This government has officially abandoned Nelson Mandela's commitment to a human rights-based foreign policy on the 15th of June. That was the day Omar al-Bashir was smuggled away from South African soil in defiance of an order of the North Gauteng High Court.
A local court sought to detain the Sudanese leader attending an African Union meeting in June, but the government insisted Mr. Bashir had immunity while attending that AU event. Tuesday's vote failed to reach the one-third necessary of parliamentarians. This is VOA News. Asian markets continued the global market slide over concerns over the weakening of China's economy and the possible future hike in a near-zero U.S. interest rate. The Shanghai Composite fell more than 4% at opening trade today. In London and New York, Tuesday shares lost about 3% in value. Oil prices also plunged. Sam Stovall is a U.S. equity strategist with Standard & Poor's Capital IQ.
The S&P is in correction mode, meaning that it recently broke below the 10% decline threshold. We actually fell as far as 12.4%. So right now, I think the jury is out, but it looks as if we are retesting those prior lows. I think the real problem is that now investors in the U.S. are worrying that the U.S. itself is headed toward recession, possibly dragged down by China or of its own accord.
China's official manufacturing index for August fell to its lowest level since 2012. Supporters of the international nuclear agreement with Iran moved to within one vote Tuesday of mustering enough support to protect the deal in the U.S. Congress. Two more Senate Democrats say they'll support the pact. The Senate returns to formally debate a Republican resolution to disapprove the accord before September 17. The added support welcomed Tuesday by U.S. spokesman Mark Toner.
We're very pleased with the support that we've seen thus far. Those senators who've come out and members of Congress who've come out publicly in support of the deal, we're going to continue to work that and try to increase those numbers.
Their support means 33 members of the Senate, 31 Democrats and two independents now support the deal. The UN agency UNESCO Tuesday confirmed the destruction of the ancient Temple of Bel by militants of the Islamic State in the Roman-era city of Palmyra in Syria. UNESCO's Giovanni Bucardi said after 2,000 years, the temple remains a focus of local religious life.
When this is over, the Syrian people, like the Iraqi people, will find a way of rebuilding their society and their cultural identity, if necessary, on those ruins.
UNESCO has called the destruction a war crime. Al-Shabaab militants assaulted an African Union base in southern Somalia Tuesday, killing at least 19 soldiers and reportedly taking others captive. The death toll was provided by a high-ranking Somali official who told VOA a similar number of AU troops were abducted by al-Shabaab. The United States has warned both sides in the South Sudanese conflict to end the fighting or face international sanctions. Fresh fighting has been reported in Jonglei and Upper Nile states days after a ceasefire was to have gone into effect as part of a peace agreement the government signed last week. At least two Malian soldiers were killed in a pre-dawn attack against an army checkpoint outside Timbuktu in northern Mali Tuesday. There was no immediate claim of responsibility. Jihadist groups linked to al-Qaeda seized control of the north in 2012 until a French intervention early the next year. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Bote in Washington. Today is Wednesday, September 2nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The African Union mission in Somalia says it has regained a military base that was attacked Tuesday by Al-Shabaab militants.
The information I have is that the base is back in our hands. The nitty-gritty of what may have happened will have to come from our soldiers after they are through with the operation. But what I know is that the camp right now is back in our hands.
Lieutenant Colonel Paul Unjuguna is Amazon spokesman. Nigeria's military says it recaptured an economic and strategic town from Boko Haram. Sierra Leone quarantines 50 people after a woman dies from Ebola. And South Africa's president survives an impeachment vote for failing to arrest President Bashir last June.
Those in favor, 100. Those against, 211. There are 17 abstentions, and the motion is thus rejected.
Africa's richest man visits Zimbabwe, and we'll tell you about the easternmost hurricane ever to form off the coast of Africa. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The African Union mission in Somalia says its troops regained control of a military base near the town of Unale, where sources say at least 19 African Union soldiers were killed in a dawn raid early on Tuesday. Al-Shabaab claims it killed up to 60 AU soldiers, but Amison denies the claims. Amison spokesman Lieutenant Colonel Paul Unjuguna says the successes the mission has made in Somalia outweigh the current wave of Al-Shabaab attacks.
The information I have is that the base is back in our hands. The nitty-gritty of what may have happened will have to come from our soldiers after they are through with the operation. But what I know is that when we talk about a tactical withdrawal is that we went to regroup and we got reinforcements and we took the camp back. The camp right now is back in our hands.
And more importantly, there's a high casualty figures being reported. We have reliable sources indicating that up to 20 AMISOM soldiers were killed. A number of others may have been captured alive by AMISOM. Can you comment on this?
I wonder what the reliable sources are also saying about Al-Shabaab numbers. Because every time we are engaged with Al-Shabaab, I always say it is important to find out who exactly is talking about the figures. This is an ongoing operation. It is not over. There is fighting still going on. I do not know those people with the ability to go to the ground and count the numbers. We always try and tell people, do not fall into the propaganda of Al-Shabaab. We have known them to even say how many people they have killed even before they have attacked an area. So we shall wait for our troops to finish the operation, and after they finish the operation, then we shall give the proper information.
And some accounts are saying that some AMISOM soldiers were captured alive. Are you going to deny or confirm this account?
I do not have that information, so whoever that came from, they would have to verify it themselves. But I do not have any information about captured people. I know as part of the operation and as we are coming to an end, we will account for everyone. And once we account for everyone, we'll be able to tell you for a fact that we are there. But as of now, there is no information to the fact that we have any soldiers that have been captured by Al-Shabaab.
More importantly, many people are asking this question. How come Al-Shabaab manage to attack and storm these major bases being manned by AMISOM soldiers?
We are engaged in something we call asymmetric warfare. This involves a small number of people who normally don't fight like any other fighters. We do not have an enemy we can identify and say this is our enemy. So surprise attack may come. It happened, like you say, in Lego. It has happened this time. And as you can see, this was a vehicle that was driven right into a gate and exploded at the gate. This is part of asymmetric warfare. What is of importance for us is how we minimize this kind of attacks.
Lieutenant Colonel Paul Unjuguna is the spokesman for the African Union mission in Somalia. He was speaking from Nairobi, Kenya, with Harun Maruf of the U.S. Somali Service. Nigeria's military says its forces on Tuesday capture or recapture from Boko Haram the economic and strategic town of Gamboru Ngala on the border with Cameroon. Spokesman Colonel Sani Kukasheka Usman says the operation involved the Air Force and Army. President Muhammadu Buhari recently gave the military 3 months to neutralize the Islamist insurgent group. Military spokesman Colonel Usman says the recapture of Gamboru Ngala is yet another example that Boko Haram is about to become extinct.
intelligence. It is no question of claim. It is a fact of life. Today, the Nigerian military were able to capture the strategic town of Gambarungala, you know, the northeastern part of the country. It is so important and strategic both to Nigerian people and, of course, the insurgents themselves, because, you know, it's an economic town and it formed the link or trade link between Nigeria and some neighboring countries, Cameroon, Niger Republic, Chad, and also Central African Republic.
You describe the Nigerian military effort as triumphant troops. You think you're kind of jumping the gun because Boko Haram is still very active with you guys?
No, they are not active. If you are following the trend of events, we have seriously degraded the activities of the insurgents and the terrorists. And this singular act of capturing the town of Gambarungala has further demonstrated the fact that the Boko Haram is about becoming extinct.
So how was this town able to be retaken? I mean, what sort of military operation are you engaged in? Just ground troops, or are you using helicopters or fighter jets?
It is a combined effort between the Nigerian Army and the Nigerian Air Force. You know, they gave firepower, support, you know, aerial bombardment, and the ground troops entered.
You talk about the importance of Gamboru. I mean, how important is it now that this town has been recaptured?
Yeah, it is very strategic to the insurgent hero to its recapture because it's a kind of artery, a main supply route where they get arms and ammunition, and of course it's a kind of international route they go about sourcing for manpower and equipment like that. But with the capture of it, we have further emasculated them and stippled them to practice and visa points.
President Muhammadu Buhari has set a three-month target for the military to make inroads against Boko Haram. How would you describe the progress being made so far? Do you think the military will meet that target?
I can tell you with every sense of responsibility, I'm confident that we will be able to deliver before that target.
And this is in cooperation with the neighboring countries, Cameroon, Chad, Niger. Was this operation just the Nigerian military?
Like, you notice of late there is a renewed effort and concern about the activities of these terrorist groups. So there is a renewed cooperation, a collective responsibility, not just among the Nigerian people and the Nigerian military, but the neighboring countries as well, under the auspices of the new multinational joint task force.
Colonel Sani Kukasheka Osman is the spokesman for the Nigerian military. He was speaking with me from the capital, Abuja. Sierra Leone on Tuesday quarantined 50 people in the northern district of Cambia, where a 76-year-old woman died over the weekend from Ebola. The country had just celebrated the release from the hospital of its last known Ebola patient. Abdoulaye Birete is the National Publicity and Outreach Coordinator in the office of Sierra Leone's government spokesman. He says the good news so far is that no one has shown symptoms of the virus, but Birete says the woman's death reemphasizes the government's warning for Sierra Leoneans to be vigilant, not intransigent.
It is one of those unfortunate situations we had after we discharged the last patient just a few weeks ago by His Excellency the President. We just received the sad news of the death of a 67-year-old woman in Tonko Limba in northern Sierra Leone or Cambia district. And of course, for us, we are very much concerned. But the good thing, though, we have the quick intervention project whereby we are able to converge to the scene immediately. And all those that are of immediate threat in terms of exposure, we are put on quarantine. And also the vaccine that was just approved as a gold trial in Guinea is now being administered, just so that we don't take any chances at all.
A few days ago, we spoke to a Sierra Leone medical official who said that a new test was done on this woman who died. Did the results come back to say now definitively that this woman died from Ebola?
And that is what it pointed to, that indeed it was Ebola positive. But so far, the good news is nobody has been symptomatic at all.
If this woman who died was supposedly sick for 5 to 10 days without the authorities knowing, don't you think it's likely we might see more cases now?
Well, that possibility is remote based on the situation on the ground, because from our understanding and investigation, This woman contracted the virus from a male survivor who virtually didn't meet the 90-day cycle and got infected, and they were hiding. It again boils to what we have been emphasizing over the past couple of months, that the only sure way we will be able to defeat Ebola in the community is when people continue to utilize the 117, which is a toll-free number, so that if you are sick, calling 117 is a sure way for early diagnosis and possible support and treatment.
Abdullah, does your government feel now that this could be deja vu all over again? Because schools have opened in your country, and on the heel of that, you have this.
Well, yes. As I mentioned, the intransigence of the community, particularly some communities we are still battling this issue with, is our huge concern. But the good news, though, is the very day this patient passed on was the very day the last patient was discharged in our treatment facility, which means it is not like we are going to start all over again.
Abdullahi Berete is the National Publicity and Outreach Coordinator in the Office of Sierra Leone's Government Spokesman. He was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. Today's Wednesday, September 2nd, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Let's give a shout-out to listeners on our affiliate station, Diamond FM, in Tamale, Ghana. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 17 minutes past the hour. A motion to impeach South African President Jacob Zuma failed to get through the country's parliament on Tuesday. This was the second time this year that the opposition Democratic Alliance failed to oust the president, who they accused of violating the constitution. Tuso Kumalo reports for VOA from Johannesburg.
The debate began with Democratic Alliance leader Musa Maimane accusing the president of failing to uphold the constitution when he allowed Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir to leave the country despite a court order to prevent his departure.
When President Jacob Zuma helped a mass murderer escape justice, ultimately violated this constitution. So, ladies and gentlemen, honorable members, vote to impeach President Jacob Zuma, this broken man.
The ruling African National Congress Party rejected the motion, describing it as baseless and attention-seeking. ANC lawmaker Lindiwe Zulu argued that Sudan's president was granted diplomatic immunity, like all heads of state who attended the African Union summit in Johannesburg back in June.
The African National Congress will not support this motion. It is aimed at undermining the political, economic, and diplomatic relations of South Africa with the AU member states.
Other opposition parties had mixed views, with some supporting the decision and others rejecting it. Once a deadlock was declared, the speaker decided to put the matter to a vote, and once again, Mr. Zuma emerged victorious.
Those in favor, 100. Those against, 211. There are 17 abstentions, and the motion is thus rejected.
The Democratic Alliance has been sharply critical of Mr. Zuma and the ANC for alleged corruption and failing to deliver basic services to ordinary South Africans. The party brought a vote of no confidence against the president in March, but that motion also failed. The DA says the motions have succeeded in putting a spotlight on what the party calls Mr. Zuma's misrule. Tuso Kumalo for VOA Johannesburg.
Uganda's main opposition forum for democratic change, the FDC, is having its delegate conference today, Wednesday, to choose a candidate who will challenge President Yoweri Museveni in the 2016 presidential race. The two contenders are retired army commander and current president, Major General Mugisha Muntu, and Dr. Chisa Besigye, who has challenged President Museveni in the last three general elections. Alex Atu Hairi is news editor of the Ugandan Daily Monitor. He says the two candidates are both strong, and whichever one emerges as the winner will indicate the direction in which the party wants to go.
Well, it's still kind of a tough choice for the FDC, which I think is a very good position for the party to be, because they are faced with very two good candidates with different dynamics. One is that the delegates ask themselves, should we vote for Dr. Besigye, who has previously in the last three races tried and failed, or should we bring in a new person in the person of General Mondlu? Of course, the challenge there is that how suitable is would the new person be? At the end of the day, the delegates will choose one of the two. And to me, as an independent observer, I think any of the two, they will have still chosen a very good candidate. Whether they try to go into a new direction by choosing Mugisha Muntu, who has a very different kind of dynamic, brings a new dynamics to the presidential race, or whether they go for Besigye, who already has a very popular following in the country, and by any standard, the most popular opposition politician in Uganda. So kind of a tough choice, but I think it's a very good position for the FDC to be. Any of the two candidates are all good in their own right, but if they choose Mugisha Muntu, then the delegates will have given a statement that they want FDC to take a completely new dimension, different from the previous three polls.
Almost every Ugandan opposition politician you talk to, they talk about the need for electoral reform. Do the two candidates see eye to eye on this?
Electoral reforms is a key issue in this election. In the overall picture of the 2000 elections in Uganda, electoral reforms, most especially the position of how the Electoral Commission is constituted, is a key issue. Basically, previously said that he would not run in any future election without clear electoral reforms. And once he decided to run in this current election, then criticism from his opponents or his colleagues came that he had turned on his word. And on the night of the debate, this was a key point difference between the two candidates, with Mugisha Muntu clearly saying that as a leader he does not like to carry threats that cannot be implemented, meaning that he would be on the ballot whether there are reforms or not. Now, this insists that his position is still the same, no reforms, no elections.
Alex Atu Haire is the news editor of the Ugandan Daily Monitor. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kampala. The visit to Zimbabwe yesterday by Africa's richest man, Nigerian billionaire Ali Dangote, has brought some excitement to the country's beleaguered business community following reports that the businessman is planning to invest in Zimbabwe. Economic analyst Prosper Chitambara with the Labour and Economic Development Institute of Zimbabwe says Dangote's move to invest in Zimbabwe is welcome news, adding it may encourage other potential investors to do the same.
I think number one, obviously it's a positive development. I think it also goes to show that there's a lot of potential, investment potential in Zimbabwe that can actually be realized if probably we do the right things, if we address some of the issues that have been raised by investors. But obviously there are a lot of opportunities, and or most of the assets rather, they are actually at a discount right now because of issues to do with liquidity. So I think investors are trying to snap up assets at a discount so that they can position themselves in the event that the economic situation normalizes in the future.
What about laws like the indigenization law and other laws?
Now, what we've seen or noticed, I think we've noticed a softening of the hardline stance that government did adopted earlier. I think there's been a thawing in terms of that stance. And also, obviously, in some cases, they could be exemptions. So some investors could actually be exempted from having to comply with indigenization and economic empowerment.
That was economic analyst Prosper Chitambara of the Liberal and Economic Development Institute of Zimbabwe. He spoke with Chris Gandhi of VOA Zimbabwe Service. It's coming up at 25 minutes past the hour. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Owoma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Wednesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with volleyball. African champions Kenya beat Algeria in sets of 25-14, 25-11 and 25-11 at the World Women's Volleyball Championships in Okayama, Japan on Tuesday. At the end of the second round, after 8 games, Kenya are 10th on the log, while Algeria is at the bottom of the 12-nation contest. Turning to motorsport, Kenyan Jaspreet Singh Chatte and his British co-driver Craig Thornley are the 2015 FIA Africa Rally Champions. The Africa Motorsport Governing Body, ARC, revealed on their website on Tuesday. Driving a Mitsubishi Lancer Evo X, Chatte secured the African title when he triumphed at the Shell Pearl of Africa Uganda Motor Rally in Mubende, some 160 kilometers west of the Ugandan capital Kampala over the weekend. The event is the sixth in the Africa Rally Championship Series after races in Ivory Coast, South Africa, Zambia, Tanzania and Rwanda. Chatte has accumulated 100 points. Zambian defending champion Jesse Singh is a distant second with 54 points, followed by Zimbabwean Muna Singh with 30, Ivory Coast's Gary Chains with 25, and Ugandan Abdul Sempebwa with 15 points. With just the Madagascar International Rally in November, before the end of the series this year, Chatte has a commanding lead, leaving his peers to battle for the minor spots. Chatte is the third Kenyan to win the annual Africa Rally Championship after Sheikha Mehta in 1981 and David Hore in 1984. Moving on to football, Ghana pipped hosts Republic of Congo 3-2 in an All-Africa Games build-up match at the new Kintele Stadium in Brazzaville on Tuesday. Elsewhere, Niger and Burkina Faso played to a scoreless draw in Niamey as Rwanda outwitted visitors Ethiopia 3-1 in Kigali in build-up matches ahead of this coming weekend's Orange Africa Cup of Nations qualifiers. Meanwhile, Tunisia challenged hosts Italy at the start of the beach soccer competition at the inaugural Mediterranean Beach Games in Pescara today, Wednesday. Libya face Greece, Egypt play Turkey, Algeria encounter Lebanon, and Morocco engage Malta. Staying in Pescara, Algeria lie fourth on the medal table at the inaugural Mediterranean Beach Games with 1 gold, 4 silver, and 3 bronze medals as at Tuesday. Egypt is fifth and Tunisia is seventh. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Al-Shabaab militants assaulted an African Union base in southern Somalia on Tuesday, killing at least 19 soldiers and reportedly taking others hostage. The death toll was provided by a high-ranking Somali official who told VOA that a similar number of AU troops were abducted by Al-Shabaab. A local resident also reported seeing captured soldiers. There was no indication where the troops might have been taken. Gunmen attacked the base at Janale in the Lower Shabella region with a car bomb at about 4:30 a.m. local time on Tuesday. Al-Shabaab gunmen then entered the camp, triggering a gunfight with African Union forces. Witnesses told VOA many of the soldiers fled. The AU mission in Somalia, AMISOM, says its troops regained full control of the base after making a tactical withdrawal. The attack occurred exactly 1 year after Al-Shabaab's longtime leader, Ahmed Abdi Godane, was killed by a U.S. drone strike. In June, Al-Shabaab attacked another AMISOM base in the same region, killing more than 50 soldiers from Burundi. That is it for this Wednesday, September 2nd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Mark Owoman, along with our engineer Jim Harmon, I'm James Barton in Washington saying, have a nice day, Africa.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic, etc.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on The Voice of America, Mondays through Fridays, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time.
With David Bandy.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.